This morning, let's continue our thought about how Jesus calls people. You know, we began saying that Jesus calls to people everywhere. Even when we're at the deepest hole, and it's a hole that we've dug, it's a self-created mess that we find ourselves in, Jesus is there. He's waiting for us to return to him. We began by reading Luke, the 15th chapter, beginning in about verse 11. It's a story that we're all familiar with. It's the story about the lost boy. Jesus said there was a man who had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, "Father, give me the share of the property that's coming to me." He divided his property between them. Not many days later, the younger son gathered all that he had, took a journey to a far country, and there he squandered his money, his property, in reckless living. The boy made a mess out of his life. He felt like he was entitled to the property that his father had amassed. And so he said, "Give me what's mine." Talk about that attitude in a bit. But let's continue reading about this poor lost boy and how he managed to turn this around. When he spent everything, a severe famine arose in that country. He began to be in need. So he hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country who sent him to his fields to feed pigs. He was longing to be fed with pods that the pigs ate. He was pretty hungry. No man gave him anything. When he came to himself, he said, "How many of my father's hired servants have enough bread? But I perish here with hunger. I'll rise, go to my father. And I'll say to him, 'Father, I've sinned against heaven before you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me as one of your hired servants.'" And that's what he did. He arose and came to his father. While he was still a long way off, his father saw him and felt compassion and ran and embraced him and kissed him. The son said to him, "Father, I've sinned against heaven and before you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son." But the father said to his servants, "Bring quickly the best robe, put it on him, and put a ring on his hand and shoes on his feet, and bring the fatted calf and kill it. Let us eat and celebrate. This my son was dead and he's alive again. He was lost and he's found." And they began to celebrate. The father is so excited that the son has come to his senses. Even though the son couldn't see himself as a child of his father at this point, but only as a servant. The father reminds the son that he is, in fact, a son. And then sadly, he had an older brother. Remember, the man had two sons. The older brother was angry. He would not go into the party. So, again, the father takes the initiative. The father, I think, had compassion on his son, his older son. He went out and he begged him to come in. The son said to his father, "Look, for all these years I've worked like a slave for you. I've always done what you told me to do. And you never gave me even a young goat for a party with my friends." Then this son of yours comes home after wasting his money on prostitutes, and you kill the best calf for him. He was angry. He felt like he had been slighted. He felt like he had earned something. What happened? When did you boys go off the rails? It's a sad story. But you know, I think the key is that both of these boys believed that a gracious promise that had been made by their father created a debt that their father owed them. They no longer viewed it as a gracious promise of an inheritance. They viewed it as something that they were owed because their father had created a contract with them, and now they were owed something. You know, it seems to me that the younger son perceived that there was an absolute debt. I'm owed this because I'm your son. And we see that over and over again with the Israelites. We're God's chosen people. And God owes us blessings just because we're God's chosen people. We may ignore God, but he still owes us the blessing. And they expect him to collect on the debt. This younger son thought that he had an absolute right to the things that his father had amassed. He said, "Give it to me. It's mine." Then there's the older boy. The older boy perceived an earned debt. He felt like his father gave him expectations. He met the expectations, and therefore his father owed him his side of the contract, his side of the promise. It was no longer a grace. It was not something that his father did for him. It was something that was owed to him. And there's a lot of indication, biblically, that caused him to think that. Look at the many statements in the Old Testament, and in the New as well. Look at Ruth. Ruth, the second chapter. Boaz is talking to Ruth. And Boaz makes this statement to her after she has made this wonderful proclamation that she will follow her mother-in-law no matter where she goes. She had left her own country. She had come with her mother-in-law back to Israel. And Boaz said, "May the Lord prepare or repay you for what you've done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. May the Lord repay you." Proverbs, the 19th chapter, verses 16 and 17. And it's a thought process that grows in us. Whosoever keeps commandments keeps their life. Promise life is contingent upon keeping the commandments, right? Whoever shows contempt for the ways, for their ways will die. Whoever is kind to the poor lends to the Lord. He will reward them for what they've done. Look at Deuteronomy, the 15th chapter, verse 10. This is Moses reminding the children of Israel of all the things that they've been through. And he says this: "Give generously to the poor. and do it without a grudging heart. Because the Lord your God will bless you in all your works and in everything you put your hand to. If you share with the poor, God will bless you. God expects you to share with the poor. It's as if you earn a blessing from God. And it's not just the Old Testament. Look at Philippians, the fourth chapter. Beginning there at verse 18, you see the Apostle Paul is writing to the Philippian church, and he reminds them of the same things that Moses reminded the children of Israel about. Philippians 4 at verse 18, Paul says, I receive full payment and have more than enough. I'm already supplied. Now that I've received from Epaphroditus the gifts that you sent, they have supported Paul in his preaching efforts. He says, the gifts that you sent are a fragrant offering, an acceptable sacrifice, pleasing to God. And my God will meet all your needs according to the riches of his glory in Jesus Christ. Yeah, the boy thought he had earned the blessing from God. And that's not foreign to a biblical manner of thinking. But you know, then you have to encounter what the Apostle Paul said in Romans, the 11th chapter, verse 35. He said, who has ever given to God that God should repay them? From him, through him, and for him are all things. To him be the glory forever. Amen. Who has given to God that he makes God indebted to him? Yes, there are conditions that are placed on God's salvation. We need to obey God. But did you really give anything to God? 1 Corinthians, the 13th chapter, verse 3, is a really interesting passage. And I want you to think about it from the New International Translation. The New International Version tends to emphasize a thought over a word-for-word translation. Probably the best new translation that's word-for-word is the English Standard Version. And I would suggest that you get that. It's a good version. It's word-for-word kind of translation. The New International Translation kind of recognizes that it's really hard to translate from one language into another and say, this word means this word. Because sometimes this word in the original has a lot of things that are built up in it that one word won't handle. So the New International Version says, we're going to have to expand the thought and make it clear. Listen to 1 Corinthians 13 at verse 3. And the way that Paul talks here, he says, if I give all I possess to the poor, if I give over my body to hardship that I may boast, but do not have love, I gain nothing. Is it possible that people obey God because they want something to boast about? Is it possible that people obey God because they want to put God in their debt? Well, you know, I think that's what the older brother thought. I have obeyed you my entire life. You owe me. And perhaps he compared himself to the younger son, because he said, I never spent your money on prostitutes. I'm better than him. You owe me. You cannot create a debt based on God's gracious promises. If it's Jesus that lives in you, if it's Jesus that animates you, that moves you, God will never owe you or me a debt of any kind. Look at Galatians, the second chapter. And specifically look at verse 20. The Apostle Paul makes a really amazing statement. He says, I'm crucified with Christ. Me, Paul, I'm crucified with Christ. Nevertheless, I live, yet not I, but Christ lives in me. The life that I now live in the flesh, I live by the faith of the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. It's not me that's doing the things that I do. It's Jesus living in me. So if I've gone off the rails, like those boys, what does the younger son teach me? What does the older son teach me? Think about the younger son for a minute. You know, I can always come to my senses, and I can reject this idea that there's a debt owed to me, or even that God owes me a blessing of any kind, just because of who I am. Think about Job. You know, Job had tremendous blessings. And because of Satan's schemes, Job lost it all. His wife said, curse God and die. Job wouldn't do that. Job served God even when there was no thought of reward at all, just because of who God was. Paul points out that the good works that we do in obedience to God must be out of a pure motivation of love. Love for man and love for God. I tend to think that it probably is a reference to a love for God. I do what I do out of love. And you know, I guess the most important thing that those boys teach me, going off the rails the way that they did, and coming back to their senses, is that Jesus living in me gives joy in pleasing God, even without thought of reward. Think about what Jesus did in the garden. Before he was crucified, he said, God, if it's possible, let this cup pass from me. But, nevertheless, not my will, but yours be done. Jesus took great joy in being able to do what God wanted him to do. If Jesus lives in me, then I'm going to do the same thing. I'm reminded of a woman who loves her husband so dear. But her husband suffers from dementia. Her husband can't even remember her name. Can't do anything for her. Can't give her a kiss. Can't do anything. And still she cares for him. And she derives great joy in being able to care for her husband. That's what happens. In her case, it's her husband living in her. In Jesus' case, it was God living in Jesus. In my case, it's Jesus living in me. We need to serve God in those ways. Well, we're going to continue to talk about these two boys next week. We'll probably try to conclude what we have to say about these two boys next week. But, you know, we have to avoid that thought that says, I serve you, God. Now you owe me. I did what you wanted me to do. You must now bless me. It's a debt. It's not. If you're here today and you want to put on Jesus, if you want to let him live in you, then we're giving you that opportunity this morning. You can put him on in baptism. Make him your Savior. Make him the animating force in your life. We can help you do that. It may be that, like these boys, you fell into that thought process that says, God, you owe me. You need to return to God. You need to return to where you were. Think about the fact that Jesus is living in you, and you've not earned the love of God. Come to your senses. Come back to the Father. He'll run to meet you as soon as he sees you. That's the way he is, because he has compassion on us. He gives us gracious blessings.